Hague today, trying to regain territory lost to Chile more than a century ago. From Cochabamba, Bolivia, FSRN's Aldo Orellana reports.
Bolivia lost more than 400 kilometers of coastline in the War of the Pacific, which ended in 1883. As a result, the country is landlocked. The government wants the international court to declare that Chile has an obligation to negotiate an agreement in good faith that gives Bolivia sovereign access to the Pacific Ocean. Several Bolivian governments throughout history have attempted to convince their southern neighbor to return the land, but Chile has always refused. Leaders argue Bolivia accepted the loss in a 1904 treaty. Bolivia says it was forced to sign. Bolivia took the case to the international court after President Evo Morales closed the talks with the Chilean government on the issue. Morales says all avenues of dialogue have been exhausted. For his part, Chilean President Sebastián Piñera has maintained the validity of its claim on the land. Aldo Orellana López, FSRN, Cochabamba, Bolivia.
And finally, the two Southern Californian women whose truck was shot nearly 100 times by police chasing ex-LAPD officer Christopher Dorner have settled with the department for $4.2 million. The women, who were delivering newspapers, were in the vehicle when the officers opened fire. Margie Carranza was shot in the back. Her elderly mother, Emma Hernandez, was injured slightly. Their truck was a different make, model, and color from the truck Dorner was reported to be driving. The settlement still has to be approved by the Los Angeles City Council. And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. Sorry, we were caught off guard there. It's 7 o'clock time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. From Billy Bump for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Manuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
Rob.
Good evening.
Bernie S.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
All right. And here we are. We're flying by the seat of our pants, but we are here. And, well, it happened kind of like I feared it would happen with the events up in Boston. Basically, now the concept of surveillance looks like something so many of us are embracing because it saved our asses, didn't it? So I guess what we need to talk about is what do we do now? Yeah, where basically we have a nation, a world that watched the suspects who were identified a week ago tomorrow via surveillance cameras. How do we counter the demand now for more surveillance everywhere so that these kinds of things can be prevented? It's a very tricky argument. Anyone want to jump in on this?
Well, I mean, it doesn't work. This event wasn't prevented.
It wasn't prevented, but you can't say that you would have ever caught the guys without the surveillance cameras. So how do you argue against more surveillance?
Emmanuel.
Bernie.
I would suggest, I've seen a lot of the pictures of these suspects online, mm-hmm. and it appears to me that the vast majority of the photos were not taken by corporate or government surveillance cameras.
Oh, absolutely.
By individuals.
Right. But, you know? but it's the first one that that pinpointed, and in a very clever way, it pinpointed these guys were unusual. These guys were doing something different, and it was dead on. Yeah, they were doing something different, and that wasn't caught by individual cameras. That was caught by surveillance on the street. And I don't think unless somebody was filming with their own cameras, everybody walking around, you wouldn't have gotten that from individuals. Now, once you got the images of the people, then it was easy for people to submit their own photos and add to it from there. But the initial identification came from that. So this is what's bugging me, because it's become very difficult to argue against something London style all throughout Boston, New York, every city in America. Of course, I guess the best argument is that it simply moves the crime to someplace else. It's a false sense that by having surveillance, you're always going to catch people, because there won't be surveillance everywhere. And then I fall into that trap of saying, well, okay, then we need more surveillance every place, then in the country, in the city, in the malls, in the churches. So I think we need to come up with some good arguments as to why this is a bad thing. And I haven't really heard any yet.
I mean, it doesn't work. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but no one has told me, and I'm sure someone would, that London is now crime-free, or that every crime in London now gets solved.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a bad argument for this week, because that's how they caught the guys. They caught them through surveillance cameras. So you can't say it doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't prevent the crime. I agree. But it does work as far as catching people in certain situations, and this is one of them.
But
so
I would,
we need a better argument.
I would argue that we have a couple of hundred years of history in this country of catching criminals before surveillance cameras were a thing. We'll never be able to say for certain that we would never have caught these guys had there not been security cameras there or surveillance cameras there.
Well, they weren't kind of daft. I mean, I'll give you that. It wasn't like they were. But as soon as their pictures became known, that's when they sort of freaked out and started shooting and driving cars fast. I think there have been a lot of criminals that have gotten away with crimes in the past, and I think they might have gotten away with it if people had not seen their faces or noticed them, unless someone was very observant. I don't like saying these things, but this seems to be the reality today.
But there really aren't easy answers to this. What we have to consider now is it worth it? We caught these guys in a short amount of time. One of them has been murdered. The other one is now maimed and in custody. But is it worth it to give up what we would be giving up, putting in more security, more surveillance, more Big Brother, when, you know, what are we defending then?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, that's a better way to approach it. What does it turn us into to have a surveillance state? All of it. I mean, my wish for next year, which I know is not going to come true, was for the Boston Marathon to take place with not a single bit of extra added security, just to show the world, however naive I might hope the world, however naive I hope we would be, or however naive I am for thinking that we are greater than we are, to show that we. Don't fear this kind of thing, that we are fine the way we are, or maybe it could be better with a little less of this. Instead, we're hearing now talk about next year they're going to have drones. Yeah, drones are going to be flying around watching everybody. Now, I don't know if these are the kind of drones that can lob bombs at people or take people out in various other ways. If not now, then maybe in the future. But, okay, you look at the path that we're taking. You look at the direction that we're going. And that's something to show people and say, this is the wrong path to be on. But I just don't think we're going to get far if we say that it doesn't work, because I think all of Boston will disagree with you today that, yeah, it did work. And they caught the guys because of this. And it's unrealistic to argue that point.
The trouble is what we give up is precious, and there's no way to get it back when it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
When September 11th happened here in town, we were told very soon after that we're going to be searching bags and backpacks and things on the subway. And this was a temporary measure. You know, just give up this freedom for a little while, because we're all afraid now, and this will make us all feel better. Now it's a dozen years later, and it's routine and accepted, and we're still opening up our backpacks for people.
I've yet to open my backpack for anybody.
Is that still a thing? I haven't seen them in a while, but I don't take the subway as much as I used to.
It is still a thing, and they still make the announcements regularly.
Yeah, they make the announcements, and those announcements are a little bit misleading, because they say that that if you're on the subway, you're subject to random search, and that's not the case. The case is if you walk into a subway station, you're subject to being asked to open your bag, and you're free to leave. Once you're in the system itself, I've never heard of a case where people are randomly searched on a train or on a platform or anything like that. If I'm wrong, someone please tell me. And I think that's indicative of New Yorkers holding on to their rights and saying, you know, you're not going to do that to us. You're not going to turn us into that kind of a society. But there is a danger that that could happen. And I think that's where we really have to focus our attack is to defend those freedoms, the ones that are left, and realize that there are some things we're probably not going to get back, unfortunately.
Emmanuel?
Yes, Bernie.
Along the lines of your argument there, I think one argument that might resonate with a lot of people is the one that the terrorists are winning mm-hmm. if they are successful in changing our way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, if the terrorist intention is to make us more afraid and to change our way of life and to make us give up a lot of the few freedoms we still enjoy in this country, then I think they are winning. And that might resonate with some people.
But you also have to ask yourself, at what point is your way of life changed? Today you have metal detectors at schools. You have cameras every place. You've got all kinds of surveillance that you did not have before. And I think that boat might have sailed, that our life might be changed. And to go back to the way it was, that would be a change in our way of living. I'd like to go back to that, but that's one hell of a battle when you're dealing with news stories like this.
So, Obama went on television and said that we won't let the terrorists change our way of life or something like that. But also, the city of Boston and some of the surrounding communities shut themselves down voluntarily for a day, refused to let anyone go outside. They shut down the public transit and the taxi network.
Mm-hmm.
And none of this, this sounds like a bad cop joke, but it's literally true. They let the Dunkin' Donuts remain open because that's a critical service. They did this lockdown, and I guess people wouldn't have, stood for it for another day. So I guess we still have some limits as a society. But basically, as soon as the thing was over, some guy went outside for a smoke, and that's how the suspect was found, by a citizen, not by the police, not by the lockdown. So it's really weird.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to go on and say that we know how to do a better job of it than the way they did it. And I also think that if you asked around, the vast majority of people were quite content staying inside their homes that day. I don't know. It's kind of dodgy ground as far as figuring out how it should have been done. It was an unprecedented situation. What bugs me is that other crimes that have far more victims aren't treated with this level of seriousness. Mass shootings, for instance. Now you're calling these guys are called enemy combatants by many politicians. The surviving guy was not charged in that manner, but there was a strong call for that. And why is it that these people, who are by all evidence so far, acting alone and acting within this country, not being helped by people outside this country, they are immediately seen as enemy combatants or terrorists, whereas people who go on shooting sprees and kill more people are not. What's the difference? I was trying to figure this out, and I'd like to see more seriousness as far as stopping that kind of a thing, in addition to stopping this kind of a thing in the first place.
Would you like me to answer that question?
Well, why not?
I think there are two reasons. One is that they didn't use a gun, and we love guns in America. And the second and probably more important reason is that they're Muslims.
Well, here's the other thing. And this is something that I want to talk about social media a little bit and how this was a disaster for social media as well. Basically, they were looking for dark-skinned people for a long, long time, and Arab people, neither one of which turned out to be true. There were names spread around through Twitter and Facebook and God knows what else of two people who had nothing to do with this. One, in fact, unfortunately, had gone missing about a month or so earlier. This is something that if you looked on the Internet, you saw these names being bandied about everywhere, along with accusations that the mass media was covering this up for some reason. And basically, a lot of people were put through hell because of rumor mongering and spreading of false information. And it wasn't until the actual photos came out that people stopped looking for dark-skinned people. And it wasn't until the actual journalists who were covering the story named the people that actual information got out, accurate information got out. You just have to be really, really suspicious of just what you read on the internet. You can't simply farm this out to the masses and expect that anything is going to go through with accuracy. I think we saw a lot of bad information being passed around, and it was pretty shocking, I think, Rob.
And that's the trouble with the current atmosphere of social media and everything, because whenever something like this would happen, you would have people like throwing around their theories, just chit-chatting about who it might be, and who should we be afraid of, who should we be blaming, who should I be angry at. And this used to happen just on front lawns and around water coolers, but now it's happening over the entire world with everything interconnected and no fact-checking going on. So you have things like, and it's even bleeding out into the mass media, where you had the New York Post publish a front page photo of a couple of guys who turned out to be just some kids who were totally innocent.
Yeah, well, that's the New York Post. I really hesitate to call them journalists in any sense. I always have. In fact, I guess the Post is the equivalent of Twitter on paper, because that's really what.
Wait a minute, Emmanuel. I read your Twitter feed last week, and you were making up all kinds of stuff.
Well, yeah, but I wasn't passing myself off as a news source, now was I?
I'm just saying that I'm trying to find it.
Oh, you're going to read my tweets on the air? Okay, fine. Go for it. I mean, this is a low for us, I guess. But
I'm just saying people like to talk about this stuff. And
People like to talk about this stuff. They are not sources of information unless they're part of the actual incident.
But now in the current media environment, we've got this 24-hour news cycle. We've got three or four huge organizations trying to each fill up time with things that will get eyeballs in, get people talking, get people to stay tuned. And so they're throwing things around that aren't facts, that aren't news, that are just like random things. They're reading, the evening news reads people's tweets on the air these days with regularity.
Yeah, I really...
It may be a new low for us, but they do it all the time. They read Facebook comments, and this is all just to fill up time, because really there is no information, but they're not going to come out on TV and say, we don't know any more than you do.
Well, they didn't have to fill time last week. There was plenty of stuff to focus on and to keep people entertained for days on end. I guess that really what comes out of this, don't believe what you see on the net or on Twitter, and especially yesterday when the Associated Press's Twitter feed got hacked. Yeah, this was something, wasn't it? Basically, somebody got into their Twitter account. The Twitter account is called AP, two letters, yeah. Maybe their password was only two letters, too. All you need to do, folks, you can do this now. Twitter.com, all right, enter as username AP, password. Guess anything you want. And if you guess it right, you can put out news stories. Although if you do put out news stories, spell the words right, try to imitate the Associated Press's style so that people will believe you, and maybe you'll actually get away with it for a little while. If I had done it, I would have put as the news story, AP Twitter account hacked. And that would have been a true story. I wouldn't have even been lying. They couldn't have denied it. What would they have done? But instead, this actually went out, that there was an attack at the White House and that Obama was injured. The stock market plunged on this news and then went right back up as soon as it was announced that it was a hoax. Maybe that would have been my story, that the stock market plunged, because then the stock market would have plunged, would have been self-fulfilling. You could have had all kinds of fun with this. But the real fact is, people should not, or my opinion is that you should not trust what you read on Twitter, even if it comes from what you believe is a reliable source, because these things are not secure. One password and you're in. They need to build a better platform if they want only authenticated people that, going back and forth, basically confirming this is that person. They're not there yet. So really, this can happen to anybody. It happened to 60 Minutes in 48 hours last week. So it happens to all kinds of different entities.
Emmanuel?
Yes.
Along the lines of media hoaxes this past week, you probably, I don't know if you heard the story, New York Post, some accuracy in journalism activists purchased a whole bunch of copies of New York Post in Manhattan and inserted a flyer purportedly written by the New York Post apologizing for all the reporting errors and sloppy journalism that they engaged in over the past week or so, and put this flyer in all the papers and distributed them free on the streets, and it went viral. And the Post was kind of kind of caught with egg on its face because they couldn't really deny it because everything in the flyer was true.
Wow. Well, that's exactly the kind of activism we need to see, people taking matters into their own hands like that. I'm just surprised the flyer was able to fit inside the paper. I'm surprised it wasn't bigger than the paper.
It was just a normal size sheet of paper that people stuck in there. And apparently they only did it to maybe several hundred copies, but they handed them out in the street and it went viral. And then they used the New York Post writing style and logo on the flyer that was inserted in the papers they bought. I'm all for that. They didn't do anything illegal and they made their point.
All right. I'd like to get back to the issue of drones, though, because this is something we're going to have to deal with increasing frequency in this city, throughout America, throughout the world. Drones of different sorts. This is what the police commissioner of Boston, Ed Davis, says. Drones are a great idea. I don't know that would be the first place I'd invest money, but certainly to cover an event like this and have an eye in the sky that would be much cheaper to run than a helicopter is a really good idea. He says he's envisioning a partnership between the city and businesses to buy and monitor lower-mounted cameras, positioned more strategically to capture people's faces. He said he has no cost estimate, and he's not sure whether he will request additional money or find it within the budget. I'm sure fear can be a very motivating factor here, and he'll get whatever it is he wants. The thing that's interesting here is... facial recognition did not play a part in capturing these guys. That's something that I think is significant. It was basically releasing an image, having people jump on that image, and as soon as they did, they were able to find out a lot more information. You didn't need this whole culture of everybody instantly being identifiable because there are enough people around with their own images to figure it out on their own.
And but, I think that's... Emmanuel, are you saying, though, that this isn't going to be an argument used that by government that now we need all this facial identification, facial recognition stuff, and driver's plate reading, automatic driver's license card, driver's plate readers, and all that other stuff because there's terrorism.
What I think right now, what's realistic, is to say that we don't need anything more than what there is right now, you know? And because what there is right now caught the guys. At the minimum, we don't need drones. We don't need additional surveillance, because how much better a job could you have possibly done? That's what I'd like to know. Anyone?
But the abuse of power, though, is self-sustaining. When you have enough power to grant yourself more power, you want it. It's basic human nature, and you're going to use it. And once you've got that power, it will be abused.
Yeah. No, that's a given. I know.
We need more funding for OSHA.
See, this is what bugs me. This University of Tennessee law professor, who is a critic of government surveillance, as we all are, Glenn Reynolds, he said that the police commissioner might be giving cameras too much credit. The record of cameras in catching terrorists has been pretty lousy. If, in fact, they caught these guys through the cameras, it's pretty much the first time. Again, I just think that's a bad argument because, most of the time terrorists blow themselves up anyway, so there's not much catching to do at that point. People certainly have been caught with cameras before, and if this is the first time, people are going to say, wow, okay, it's proven itself. I really think that we need to be looking at the additional surveillance that's being planned and the abuses that are going on with existing technology,
Emmanuel,
rather than trying to say that something that obviously did do the job doesn't work. Yes, Bernie.
Mike started to bring up a point about that we need more funding for OSHA. I saw an interesting statistic that Mike might have seen also over the past week that everybody who's died in the United States from terrorist attacks since before 9/11, including 9/11, including those people in the past 12 years or so, 20 times more people have died in America, in North America, as a result of workplace accidents. So if our society is going to invest money in making us safer, wouldn't it be more sensible and a better use of that money to spend it on workplace safety and save far more people's lives than all the surveillance stuff can possibly do?
Are you including mass shootings in those terrorist statistics?
Your
figures might get a little skewed if you do.
Well, it depends on. I mean, it's kind of foggy in what you determine is a terrorist thing. And I think things that were included were mass shootings. I don't think individual killings by guns were included, but mass shootings were. And frankly, even that number is relatively small compared to, it's a small number compared to the tens of thousands, tens of thousands of people have died in workplace accidents in the past dozen years. And, you know, OSHA is clearly underfunded, and money could be better spent saving Americans' lives that way.
People just work too much, I think, but that's just me. But again, you know, if you say this is a terrorist event, then why on earth was Columbine not considered a terrorist event? You had basically the same thing. You had a couple of alienated people that lashed out at those around them for God knows what reasons. And yeah, as Mike will say, it's because they're Muslim. You know, we need to also think a little bigger as far as how we define terrorism in the first place. You know?
So I don't think terrorism is a very useful category. It basically means you know, it's a political judgment, not a how many people are dead judgment. But I think that, I wonder why we're spending so much, and I know why, so to say I wonder is really disingenuous, but it's curious that we're spending so much attention and effort on this case in Boston and almost none in the case in Texas, in which more people died. That was also a violation of many laws. I don't even know if they're going after the people who ran the plant. They're certainly not going to be threatened with the death penalty. And it's really interesting.
Do they know how that fire even got started? Because I thought it was kind of weird that 20 years almost to the day after Waco, a fertilizer plant explodes right next to Waco. Yeah, I just think that's kind of an odd coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the details. I don't have them in front of me. But the answer is basically they were storing large amounts of chemicals unsafely.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, and there's laws that define what safely is, and those laws were violated.
But again, how did the fire get started? That's something I have not heard an answer to, and I would like to know that. The other aspect to this whole Boston incident has to do with technology. And Bernie, you shared a very interesting article with us the other day as far as wireless, how the wireless system or the cellular system up in Boston completely collapsed. And this seems to be something that that we see every time there's some kind of an incident, whether it be a storm or an attack or just something that involves lots of people using the phone at the same time. And is there anything else you can point to that was a problem here?
Well, it just comes down to the economics and the fact that cell phone companies are not mobile telecoms are not regulated like landline carriers were for a long time. To provide a certain, what's called, it's a term of art called grade of service. You know, back in the day with the dial tone, it was how long it would take for you to get a dial tone when you picked the phone off the hook. And typically it was measured in milliseconds. Nowadays, I have sometimes waited a whole minute to get a call through on a cell phone in a crowded area or more if it's just hosed and it's too crowded. There's no incentive for the mobile phone companies to provide the level of service that's necessary in the rare instances when there's a whole bunch of people needing to make the call right away. And they make so much money, billions and billions of dollars a year, that they can funnel some of those obscene profits into lobbying to prevent themselves from being regulated. So we end up with this perverse situation where just when we need our mobile phones the most, such as people needed them in Boston right after these explosions, they can't get their calls through. There's just no reason the phone companies are going to do it. And they don't care about people's welfare. They care about making money. That's their responsibility as corporations, to make as much possible money as they can for their shareholders. But that conflicts with what's in the public interest.
So let me get this straight. Regular phone companies, the ones like Verizon or in the old days New York Telephone and 9X, were required by government regulation to maintain a certain standard of service that was available to everybody. And there's no such guarantee with cellular phone companies, correct?
That's right. In fact, all the telcos that provide landlines are regulated by state public utilities commissions. But state public utilities commissions have no say. They don't regulate mobile carriers. The FCC has sort of a very loose hand in regulating some aspects of mobile telecoms, but mobile telecoms basically pay people in Congress, pay lobbyists to lobby Congress, and Congress tells the FCC what to do, and then the FCC tells the mobile telcos what to do. So as a result, you had the situation where the mobile telcos don't really have to do much they don't want to do.
So, Bernie, I don't know exactly how it works, but they're required to provide a certain grade of service, but it's still not the maximum possible service. I remember on 9/11, you couldn't make a landline call either because those networks were also congested. So it's a higher grade of service, but it's not like an infinitely high one.
Yes, it's a huge difference. Like
the only reason I couldn't make a landline call on 9/11 was because all the payphones were broken and not maintained. But, you know, in certain situations, in a crisis with a landline, you have to maybe wait a minute to get a dial tone because a dial tone is actually an indication that, yes, you can dial. You have a circuit of some sort. And I actually was able to make a cell phone call on 9/11, too, but it took quite a few attempts. But, you know, I think in this particular case, there is less capacity and there are more people trying to use it all at the same time.
That's right.
Plus, you know, it's also a lot easier to turn off. It's a lot easier to control these kinds of networks. Look at Egypt. Look in various other countries where crowds got out of hand and basically a switch was thrown and all of a sudden people couldn't communicate anymore. It's not quite as simple to do that with landline communications.
Why not?
I don't know why not. It's.
I mean, you can still call Verizon and they can flip the switch.
It's not all centralized in one small area like a cell phone transmitter. There's all kinds of circuits and wires spread out through a large area, and it's harder to just turn off. We have not seen that happen in the past in various uprisings throughout the decades.
I mean, the Egyptian government, in addition to shutting down cell phones, they shut down wired internet.
Well, they cut lines. They turn off access to the internet for various ISPs and things like that. But to actually shut down the phone company, first of all, they use the phone company themselves. So they'd be cutting themselves off at the same time. You can't just target, other than cutting individual lines, you can't target certain people. It's more difficult. But another aspect to all this, which I thought was kind of almost humorous, is basically what happens to the way we think. Now, according to this article, which appeared in the AtlanticCities.com is the website, our smartphones keep our complicated lives choreographed across the sprawling metropolitan areas we inhabit. Psychologists and sociologists have found that we think of these devices as extensions of our bodies and minds. And in Boston, this was all too apparent, even when runners, whose mobile batteries had been drained after the long run, which is the whole other issue, when they were able to locate a phone, they couldn't recall what numbers to dial, having long ago given up memorizing phone numbers in favor of their smartphone's electronic address book. And that's, you know, something like that, we've got nobody to blame but ourselves. And I think basically we can make use of all kinds of different technology, but when we become dependent on one particular type, there are all sorts of things that we risk. We risk giving up, and we see this time and time again. I'd like to take phone calls from our listeners on these particular issues and things like that. Is there anything else in the news? A CISPA update. I understand that CISPA was passed by the House of Representatives, but now, according to various news organizations, it's stalled in the Senate, as things tend to do.
So, don't count on it. They'll call your senator.
Probably they will, yeah. But right now, I don't think that... that it's going anywhere, but that's not a reason to think that the battle is over. The battle is certainly not over. In fact, here's an editorial that appeared on some website called redstate.com. This is why we need to pass CISPA. It reads, we're at war online. Iran, North Korea, and Russia are the sources of sustained attacks on our government and our economy. They steal from us. They disrupt our operations. And they're no better than the pirates of old. On the sea, such attacks would eventually mean war. But on the internet, they get a pass. Individuals do tend to get nabbed after the fact as they build massive botnets for credit card fraud and Bitcoin mining. But it's... not enough to sit back passively and wait to get attacked before doing anything. We need to be proactive, and that means putting together all the information we can about attacks past, present, and future. We need to be able to deal with attacks before the spin-up fully. Right. We need to pass along warnings before it's too late, and that means we need legislation to prevent trial lawyers from making a mess of all this. So that's why it's time to pass CISPA. And if that hasn't convinced you that it's a bad idea, here's some more. Inaction isn't going to fly as an answer here. If we do not find a way to use government in a legitimate role as national security provider, then the Democrats will try again. The last few times they've tried, they went with a high regulatory approach, giving the president emergency dictatorial powers over private property and internet infrastructure. These bills have gone as far as the internet kill switch plans, letting the president order that American internet connections to the rest of the world be shut down and be given power over the private employees who have the ability to do that. It is important that we can improve the situation and get us moving in the right direction with a light touch, a clearinghouse for voluntary information sharing, aggregating data in industry standard ways. It's about the lightest possible touch we're going to have here. Amendments are possible. There are surely ways we can tweak the language of the law to find just the right balance between private privacy agreements and the need to address the pressing national security threat. Address those in the Senate. But nebulous privacy concerns are not an argument in themselves. Improving this bill is something that must be done in a constructive way. In particular, we must dismiss entirely the left libertarian radicals who keep screaming that this bill has anything to do with copyright or SOPA. The anarchists, freeloaders, pirate party types, anontards, and associated scum want to sink this bill because they oppose greater cybersecurity. The online bomb throwers don't want us to be better protected. Let the normal legislative process move forward, amend CISPA into the best practical bill we can make it, and make it into law. Well, guys, what do you think? Are we going to sign up now?
I think I feel measurably stupider for hearing that whole thing through.
So, like redstate.com. That's a
so I was having trouble understanding the argument there. I don't know if you – I know you read it but didn't write it. Maybe you understand it a little more having read it more than once. They are arguing for greater government power to spy on us because that is consistent with a small government philosophy.
Well, a small government philosophy as long as it's doing what they want it to do. So as soon as say a state disagrees with them, then state power goes straight out the window, and you need the federal government to step in and put that state in line. So there's so much hypocrisy here. You can make a sandwich out of it, but basically CISPA is a threat. Maybe we'd be better off telling people why CISPA is a threat. Anybody want to tackle that?
I especially like the bit in that rant about how trial lawyers are going to mess this up. So basically, we need CISPA because the system of due process needs to be put to a stop.
Yeah, okay, but that didn't address why CISPA is a threat. Does anybody want to try that?
CISPA is a threat because it basically opens up you being – how do I word this? It opens up a great deal of potential for surveillance in an abusive manner because of things that are not illegal, because you break some company's terms of service, which they can put anything they want in and interpret it any way they want and then decide you've broken it. It gives the power to private companies to swap information with each other and the government without due process, without warrants, because they feel like they want to.
Bernie, anything to add to that?
Well, yeah, and even if under CISPA, if I'm not mistaken, if corporations can say they feel that their networks are at risk, they can not only spy on us in a manner that would be in violation of our Fourth Amendment rights if it was the government doing it, and provide that information to the government, who I'm sure would never ask them for this information, without any accountability. You can't sue them. They're given full immunity. Moreover, under CISPA, I believe corporations are actually able to go on the offensive and hack into other people's or other companies' computers if they say they feel that they're threatened by these other organizations. We all remember the Sony rootkit hack years ago where consumers' computers were basically infiltrated by Sony, who was trying to enforce some crazy copyright.
This was not the LoSEC hack. This was Sony actually acting against individual people.
Right, right. And CISPA will provide corporations with immunity to do this really wantonly without any accountability. It's just dangerous in so many ways, in my opinion.
All right, it's the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, which we abbreviate as CISPA, CISPA, passed the House last week, 288 to 127, so our work is cut out for us. Obama has said he will veto this. in its current standing, and it has not made it through the Senate yet. So there is time, but go to EFF.org and help them because they're the ones in the front lines. Mike?
I mean, what's crazy about this bill is that even casual listeners of our show will know it's really not that hard for the government to get all the data it wants about everything it wants data about already under current law. They do it all the time. We talk about it on the show all the time. Corporations already have almost total immunity from spying on you. The when the stars align in just such a way that a company actually gets fined for violating someone's privacy, you get these billion-dollar corporations with $1,000 judgments against them, and they just write it off as a cost of doing business. And yet, somehow, this total lack of regard for your privacy is not a large enough lack of regard for certain players. And I just don't get what they want.
Well, no, I think the theme that we're focusing on tonight is that it's never enough. If you have enough surveillance, you always want more. If you have enough laws, you always want an additional law. That never stops. It never will stop. And that's why it's important for us to say enough already. Let's look at if we have too much. Let's look at if this is working at all. And let's stop adding more fuel to the fire and making things even worse. All right, we're going to take some phone calls. The phone number is 212-650-5782. But first, a couple of news updates. A former LOSEC member who went on a hacking spree in the Sony Pictures website and database has received a one-year federal prison sentence for his actions. Corey Kretzinger, 25-year-old from Decatur, Illinois. Is that how you say it, Bernie? Decatur?
Yes.
Okay, wasn't sure. He used the online alias Recursion when he was a member of the hacker group Low Security, or LOSEC, to breach the Sony site and leak customer data that included names, addresses, phone numbers, and email addresses. He was arrested in September 2011 and pled guilty to computer hacking charges in relation to the Sony Pictures leak. LOSEC is an associated act of international hacking group Anonymous. Interesting way of describing them. Again, you know, I've expressed my opinion on this before, that this kind of thing really is not tantamount to a crime in my eyes. This information was already there. It was on their website, for God's sake. It was something that was not protected properly and had no business being there. So this guy goes to jail for a year, has to pay $600,000 in restitution. This seems like a waste. And also in Australia, the alleged leader, a so-called leader, a self-proclaimed leader of that same hacking group, and I didn't know the leader was in Australia, has been charged in connection with an attack on a government website in early April. That's according to Australian police officials. In their news release, which was posted on their website today, the Australian Federal Police said the man was a 24-year-old internet technology professional from Point Claire, which is a suburb on the New South Wales coast. He's charged with two counts of unauthorized modification of data and one count of unauthorized access to or modification of restricted data. He faces 10 years for the first two charges and up to 2 years on the third charge. They did not release his name, but they said he worked for a company that did work for government agencies. And the release called him the self-proclaimed leader of the hacking group. It's interesting how you can be a leader of an anonymous group of people, but the media keeps identifying people in that way. And again, we have to look at these things in context as to what it is that actually took place, what actually happened, what harm was caused. For instance, this whole Twitter thing, which I got a good laugh out of yesterday, and the one last week with 60 Minutes and 48 Hours. Are they actually going to open up an investigation and waste taxpayer dollars and law enforcement time to track down somebody using a Twitter account without permission? Bernie, do you think they're actually going to go that path?
It wouldn't surprise me because, you'll probably get the FBI and law enforcement involved. And I don't think that's a good use of tax dollars to be protecting corporation, social networking corporation, sloppy security.
Social networking. For God's sake, people, get a grip. All right, you know, as that noise, that annoying noise will tell us we are getting phone calls, so we should probably take them. 212-650-5782 is our telephone number. And good evening, you're on Off the Hook. Why? Why? Why do they do that? 212-650-5782. Let's take this phone call. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Wow, I get really good luck with this.
Yes, well, you got through, and no one else did.
Okay, well, I just actually happened to run into Rob T. Firefly on the A-Train, and we had an interesting little discussion.
Hope you didn't hurt him.
Pertaining to what occurred in Boston, I would really love you guys to have Steve Rambam or someone like that as a guest to discuss, well, how does this process actually occur? You have, you know, you're looking for suspects. You notice some suspicious activity in a camera feed. You start following the trail. You see someone leave a bag, which is apparently the explosive device. Then does that get sent into a database? And is that database run by the NSA? Is it run by a private security firm? Are there multiple firms with a facial recognition database? You know, I'm wondering, what links all of these cameras that are all over the place? Is there a guy in some sort of mothership on the moon who's getting all of these feeds all at once? Or, you know, I'm just wondering, basically, using the tragedy of what occurred in Boston, what is the trail, the digital trail, so to speak, by which they would go about pursuing individuals after, you know, identifying them through facial recognition?
Well, you just make me wish that Steve was here right now so we could get an answer to that, because, yeah, he'd be the person to talk to, and I can tell you he's going to have one hell of a talk at Hope in 2014, but I don't want to wait that long.
Sure.
Yeah, Bernie, go ahead.
In this case, I've read, if you can believe news media reports, that it was a retail store's camera system that had the pictures that were initially used to identify that these guys look suspicious.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the shots we all saw of them walking down the sidewalk, that was from an independent entity, that was from a store, that was not from some kind of citywide surveillance or government surveillance.
To that, do they have to get access?
It depends where they are. In this case, I believe they actually caught, and I've seen this happen in murder cases in Philadelphia, where the police actually have to go to the retail store and say, "Hey, we need to look at your DVR and download the information at it, and we'll make a copy of it and we'll take it." However, as I noted on a recent show, in Philadelphia and other cities, local governments who are being funded by the Department of Homeland Security to subsidize the installation of commercial closed circuit TV cameras in exchange for having real-time access to the feeds. So it depends where it is, but we're moving slowly towards a situation where even the commercial feeds are going to be accessible by government agencies.
You see, in this particular case, this is a good example of, you know what, it worked fine with an independent entity such as a store having its own surveillance system. And this harkens back to what Kyle and I went through in Sweden when we talked to the person who ran the watch store. I think it was a watch store that happened to capture images of this terrorist who blew himself up and nobody else. And then that store was penalized for having a surveillance system in the first place, which I thought was kind of ridiculous. But you have a situation here where a store is running their own surveillance and they give that to the police because an investigation is going on. And that is all you need. All you need is independent people doing their own thing. You don't need more than that. You don't need the government stepping in and monitoring every single street, because that is enough. And I think that's what we should focus on. Yes, it worked, but it worked because of the way it was set up outside of government influence, and they did not need real-time access to this.
Right.
Seem fair?
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call, and let's see if we can get some more. 212-650-5782. Well, of course, we can hear the calls coming in now, so let's take this one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up. Did you hang up? They hung up. Can you believe that? All right. Well, let's...
No, they don't. They're not hanging up. They have 40 seconds for their call to be answered.
Yeah, but I picked up the call as soon as it started coming in. Here it is now. I don't think 40 seconds has gone by. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please. Yes, go ahead.
So facial recognition was not used here, from my understanding of the
correct
reports.
Yes, Facebook had nothing to do with it.
You know, and there's an interesting article on Sophos Security or whatever their website is, talking about how facial recognition, you know, in like the movies and stuff like that, is kind of way off at this point. That we don't have like the bandwidth and technology to really pull it off.
But it is going to get better, and it's going to be all encompassing, and that's what we have to look out for.
Yeah, exactly. Like long term, yeah, it's, you know, something that we should be aware of. But at this point in time, it's not like, you know, it's being imminently used. So anyway, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that call. I thought there was going to be more of a point. 212-650-5782. Mike.
So it wasn't automated, but the according to the affidavit from the FBI, they did pull up the driver's license photo of the suspect to compare it to the photographs from the surveillance cameras. So there's a database involved. It's not automated yet, but I'm sure they want it.
Well, wait,
to
they got how'd they get they got his name, right?
Once that's they had the name, they were like, oh, well, yeah, that might indeed be the guy.
Okay. So yeah, that's not anything really that amazing that they were able to do that.
I'm not amazed, yeah. but you know, they're thinking that there's a database with your photograph in it, and it's only a matter of time before they hook it up to a computer.
Okay. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Okay. Yeah, at that time, I did wait a while. All right. I'm sorry. 212-650-5782. We only have one line right now, so it takes a little bit of time for us to get to everybody. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up.
Yep. You know, when I was just thinking about it with the three differences between, like, let's say, a meteor, a meteoroid, and a meteorite. A meteor is...
Okay, wait, is this of anything to do with what we're talking about?
Well, yeah, well, I'm getting to it, but then when...
No, get to it now. Tell us, please tell us what this has to do...
What do you have against rocks?
Huh?
What do you have against rocks?
Well, I don't like talking to them. 212-650-5782. For God's sake, people, let's stay on subject here. It's not that hard. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Hello, how are you?
Yes, I'm good. Go ahead.
Hey, this is Greg from Bernie. I got a question about how y'all feel about FBI possibly taking over technology such as the Samsung Galaxy being able to do face recognition.
Oh, I'm all for that. No, wait, I'm not all for that. No, Bernie, how about you? You have an opinion on this?
Taking over a phone? Okay, you're saying that the FBI might have the ability to hack into a particular model phone and view through its camera and then identify people automatically that way? Is that what you're saying?
It's possible. Doesn't the Galaxy, the Galaxy 3 or 4 has that technology right now that probably possibly could be manipulated?
Well, if a phone has that feature and if the phone is compromised, I suppose people could, illicitly or covertly use that feature remotely to identify who's near the phone. I don't know of any criminal cases where that's happened yet, but... I guess that's an eventual possibility.
All right. Thanks for your reply. Take
All
care.
Right. Thanks. Thanks for that call. 212-650-5782. I wasn't aware that particular phone had anything additional as far as being open to that sort of a thing. And I also don't know why I can't get this light to go off. Okay. 212-650-5782 is our telephone number. Getting a lot of calls, but again, we only have one line, so we have to wait for them to come in. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up. Yes, are you there? Oh, boy. Can you believe that? They hung up a second time, or someone else hung up. I think we have another call coming in immediately. No, I heard a noise. There it is. And good evening. No, it's not working. Okay, you know, I think someone's picking up a phone somewhere else. Good evening. Is anybody there?
Yeah, but let me just finish
it.
The meteorite.
No. We can't have this. 212. It's like Rebel times two. 212-650-5782. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. All right, you know, we don't have to take phone calls. We don't have to do that. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook, and you're the last chance.
I thought you guys were running out of money like you were going broke. Now you act like everything's peachy keen.
Oh, we never act like everything is peachy keen. I don't know where, who's acting
optimistic.
You were going
broke. You were like ready to go off the freaking air.
Well, we're not off the air. We will be asking for money again in a couple of weeks. So I'm sure that'll be pleasing to you to see that happen. Mike.
That is probably the first telephone call in the history of public radio to complain that we don't fundraise enough.
Yeah, definitely. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Let's just listen to this for a little while. It's kind of pleasing. Yeah. All right. Anyone out there who has something sane to say or something related to what we're talking about, please call us. 212-650-5782. Patience wearing thin. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes.
Hi.
From the Bronx.
I know, and I'm happy to hear your voice,
yeah,
because I know you'll be on topic.
Zuspa is chutzpah. That's what I think of.
Oh, I like Zuspa. That. That's good. That's good. Straight from the Bronx.
And I think that this situation, you know, I just give you some disturbing thought. No one said that maybe we're going back to the Oswald era.
And what is the Oswald era?
Well, meaning that this thing could have elements of the Oswald story in it.
The Lee Harvey Oswald story?
Yeah.
Okay. How so exactly?
Well, meaning that they need to prove to the American public, somebody needs to prove that we need them constantly. We can never live without them.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting up all these cameras and everything.
Well, I mean, that's the case of any authority figure, is to convince somebody that they are needed and necessary and you can't possibly survive without them. And I think that's something that is practiced to perfection in this country.
Well, I wonder if someone put these rats up to doing this situation.
Well, I don't know. I think they're basically a bunch of imbeciles that decided to do this on their own. That's my personal opinion. But, you know, it doesn't take much to get people to do things like that, or just wait for people to do things like that and then spring into action. And I don't think it's much of a stretch to say that this is really what a lot of people in power wanted to happen, so that they could pounce, just like they did with the Patriot Act, and get more freedoms restricted, more of those pesky freedoms that get in the way of surveillance and law enforcement. And basically stomp all over the Constitution and not care about the consequences.
Well, it's just a thought I've got. I can't prove anything, but it seems they always go back to the 9/11 story, and to me it goes back further.
All right. Well, thanks again for your call, and let's try and get a couple more to come in. 212-650-5782, and good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, you got a same caller here, man. You guys do a great show. Unfortunately, there's a lot of idiots out there.
I thought you said you were the same caller. You said you were a same caller.
Same
okay,
caller,
that's good. That's good. You scared me for a second.
Yeah, but I like Tom from the Bronx, and that voice is indistinguishable. Sometimes he goes off a little bit, but his voice is distinguishable.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
We have many distinguishable listeners.
Yes. And he talks to a lot of different radio stations. I hear him on a lot of different
And, you know, I think Tom from the Bronx calls on a landline. I just want to say that. It sounds like he's calling on a landline. And you, sir, I think you're calling on a cell phone.
Yeah, but can you hear me now? It's a Verizon Droid phone. It should be top quality.
Well, I'd go back to them with that bill of goods. And it's not quite. But, yeah, it's fine. It'll suffice for now.
Right. And, okay, the surveillance is a double-edged sword. I understand what you're saying about Big Brother and constantly being monitored. But at the same time, if we didn't have all this cell phone technology, we wouldn't have gotten a picture of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, what do you do when somebody is this crazy? You have to have security. I mean, an 8-year-old kid is blown away because this guy is some radical, you know, Islamic terrorist. I mean, this is crazy.
Wait, but things like this have happened in throughout history, and you will never be able to stop them completely. That's an unfortunate reality, but I don't think increased surveillance is going to be the answer to keep something like that from happening. They'll just figure out something else.
Well, okay. Well, the problem is, though, if this does happen, the fact that cell phone technology, first of all, it's beyond the shadow of a doubt that these are the guys. I don't know who thinks that they show them with a backpack, they show them without a backpack,
mm-hmm.
there's an eyewitness, but a camera does not lie. And I understand what you're saying about the Constitution. There's plenty of other things about the Constitution. I mean, Barack Obama and his wife are a little hypocritical when they talk about organic farming and they put in this thing for Monsanto not to be sued for genetic engineering. There's a lot of things about the Constitution. Don't get me wrong about this. There's scary things happening. 9/11 and the Patriot Act and without trial and stuff like that. There is some things you do have to be concerned, but at the same time, we have these guys on a surveillance video. We have their backpacks, we have their image. We know it's them. It's there's no way that they could get out of this.
Right, right. Actually, we have to wrap this up, but I think the point is that existing technology seems to have worked, and yes, cell phone technology helped as well in some regards. We don't need to have all-encompassing governmental live action surveillance all the time. I'd like to be able to talk to this more. I wish his caller had called earlier. If you want to add to the discussion, please give us a shout via email. And that address is oth@2600.com. oth@2600.com, Off the Hook. We'll be back again next week. Till then, have yourselves a good night and stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show.
You run your ass off into the subway to get to your job. Because you want to buy a coat or a house. They own everything. 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 They own everything, brother. Black brother, pink brother, yellow brother, white brother. They own everything.
Wow, that was something. That was interesting. It ended just like that, and I said, what happened? He says, oh, it's supposed to end like that. Oh, isn't that great? We got a special show today. I went to that 3D Expo coming up. Well, that's in 2 seconds, which would happen to be now.
You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM, also streaming on the web at WBAI.org, also streaming on the web at PCRadioshow.org.
And today is April 24th, 2013.
And this is the Personal Computer Show.
Alrighty, guys, let's do this.
And welcome aboard to the Personal Computer Show. This is Joe King. Glad to see you again. Haven't seen you for almost a week now. On my left, that's really funny, next to me is Hank Key. And on the left coast, way beyond where he's sitting, is David Perry. David, how you doing out there?
Pretty good. I'm just laying here in the sand, watching the surf roll in.
Oh, my. What time is it?
3 hours earlier. 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
The sun is still shining brightly. The lovely ladies are walking up and down Huntington Beach. And
palm trees literally blowing in the breeze. I can see them from here. And actually, there's a guy up at the top of that palm tree with a chainsaw.
And David, I understand that there's a whole wave of malware coming in, rolling onto the shores of Huntington Beach.
Yeah, it's true. true. We got done with all the hypodermic syringes that came in earlier, and now we've got malware washing in. It's funny because they have to put up surf conditions, and, you know, they can't surf then once there's too much malware in the water.
Oh, that is a problem. Hank, what do we have? You know, the show tonight is going to be an interesting schizophrenic sort of a show. David has a story coming down. I'll be introducing that in a few minutes. And Stevie has a couple of stories about a new technology that's capturing the world's imagination. That is everybody except those who are, like me, a Star Trek fan. But I understand you have some news for the fanboys out there.
Yeah, there's actually two items, and both of them concerns Apple. Let me take the first one. It appears that Apple is sending back to their contract manufacturer, in this case it's Foxconn, because anywhere between 5 million to 8 million iPhones, they were not properly manufactured, either for the finish on the phones or the fit and finish wasn't proper, and the cost of reproducing or remanufacturing or replacing those 5 million to 8 million phones is $200 a pop, and I think Foxconn will probably take a hit on that unless Apple is saying we'll share the cost in it. I guess the question I have is, I mean, quality control. I mean, how could over a million units get right by it?
Well, I've got a way that we could solve that whole problem for Apple and Foxconn, and that's part of your next story.
Well, okay. Now, you know, maybe it's in a rush to get the iPhones to market as quickly as possible. Then they might have taken some shortcuts. But one thing that we do know is that Tim Cook made an announcement that Apple, as a corporation, has about $145 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars in cash reserve, and they intend to redistribute that to their shareholders, about $100 billion of it, over the next 2 years. And that raises an issue with me.
Well, how much of that 150, did you say?
$145 billion of cash reserve.
Now, maybe if some of that was spread among the workers to give them a decent living wage, they wouldn't have had to reject 8 million phones. You're saying that's all going back to the shareholders.
Shareholders.
I think that sucks.
Well, let me put it this way. Who, with any American corporation, who is their first responsibility to?
The
shareholders.
The shareholders.
You said American corporation and responsibility in the same sentence.
That's a difficult one to swallow in and of itself. But Hank, the point here is that if you take the workers at Foxconn, and I don't know how it is in the rest of the world, but there seems to be an awfully high a number of suicides and workplace injuries and things like that. It seems to me that if you gave people a decent salary and didn't drive them on a 7-day work week and a 12-hour work day without overtime, maybe you wouldn't have to reject 8 million phones.
Well,
Stevie, what do you think?
Come on. This is the way things are done in America right now.
No.
I know it's not America.
No, in other words, we know that people have said to different companies, the way you manufacture goods and the way the workers are overseas,
treated. We
are, you know, we'd like to see better working conditions, especially for the garment workers and so on. There's no outcry to say to Apple, hey, you should do the same thing for manufactured goods.
No, excuse me. There is an outcry, and there is even an organization formed to go over and support the workers' rights. But there are no unions.
Right.
I know that all of you guys yell at me all the time that I'm too pro-union, but there are no unions involved here, and it's no problem at all if a bureaucratic organization wants to send in somebody to inspect today. I'll straighten everything out today. Tomorrow I'll go back to what I was doing before.
It's business.
Business.
I could go get my banjo and sing some pro-union songs if you'd like.
No.
There once was a union made.
Well, the next item that I want to talk about is has to do with Google, and apparently Google's been hit with the fact that they have their Google Play, the downloads, that many of those apps are riddled with malware, and in one report, up to 9 million downloads were done with malware. I feel like saying...
David, I can't buy that, do you?
Well, let me finish this, okay? Now, I was watching TV in the last 2 days. I see that Microsoft has this thing called Scroogle.com, and it's a campaign that says, you know, Google has, you know, they lack quality control, and they also talk about Google... has, you know, your information is not private at all. They give it away and so on. I felt like saying, hey, didn't we talk about Microsoft where different government agencies are asking Microsoft for content and they give it up without even challenging it? I mean, these are the people who are they're pointing a finger at Google. They should look in the mirror themselves. And, of course, there's a big dispute that's going on right now where, you know, with Microsoft Bing, with Google search, they're saying who has a better search engine. And now I understand one of the questions is the stuff that Bing come up with, does it contain malware? Is it really malware? Dave, can you comment on that?
Yes. AV Test, who is my old friend Andreas Marx, and if you're listening in, Andreas, hello. Andreas is in Magdeburg, Germany, and he is the most reputable AV testing organization on planet Earth. Way more than anybody else. And AV Test says that Bing produces twice as many corrupted and infected sites on a search than Google does, that Google is filtering out more dangerous sites than Bing is. So that's a significant statistic, and if they say it, it's probably so. These are the people who do the absolute best job testing these things.
Yeah, but who makes that determination, who has malware, which site has malware, which one doesn't? Because I'm sure some of these sites would dispute that.
Well, how would the sites know? They wouldn't know. I mean, it's not the sites are intentionally putting malware in there, Joe. They're getting hacked, and people are planning sites through SQL injection and other likely
methodology. It's also more than that, because sometimes the mere name of the site has been hacked, and you're going to not to the site the DNS has redirected.
Sure,
it.
There's DNS hacking. There's a whole variety of things, but I believe that they are not as scrupulous in their filtering of, and they will be now. See, Microsoft has had the problem that they have been very lax on security for a long time, and they've developed this culture where they're trying to patch it all up and get, you know, ahead of the game. But that's why they're in the antivirus business. That's why Microsoft Security Essentials exists, is their reputation is of making the world's least secure computer operating system.
Well, that's something to be, you know, you always
proud
want to
of.
Be the most of something.
Yeah.
Right. But what I would say more than that is all this stuff about beating up on Google, Microsoft wants that business. In America, we talked about American business practices. In America, you must expand. Your business must expand and get bigger every year. And Microsoft, they wanted the browser business. They wanted the application business. Now they want the search engine business. And... they are launching against Google something that back in the Abby Hoffman days used to be referred to as co-Intel Pro. So what we're seeing is basically a propaganda campaign against Google, and that wouldn't surprise me if the Google Play were more or less a trumped-up story, because I find that I don't know that they would have been able to tell that 9 million people downloaded it while it was infected.
Well, that's part of the problem. I keep on all of my mobile machines, the pads, the laptops, the tablets, and the smartphones, I keep a program that I find fairly decent called Lookout. And if it doesn't spot everything, it has not spotted anything that other ones have missed. It has yet to find a download from the Google Android Play Store that was rejected. Now, granted, I don't download pornography and I don't download a lot of the games. I download utilities and I download applications that are efficiency applications. And I'm sure that the bad guys would go after hot babes and things like that, but...
No, actually, statistically, it's statistically, porn is now just about on a par with the rest of the web.
So there you go. I don't buy it. I want to change the subject slightly, guys, because I was a big fan of Star Trek, and one of the things on Star Trek that I really, really always wanted, and I want one today, is a replicator. I walk over to my computer corner, and I say, computer, and it says to me, working, and I say, make me a martini, and it makes me a martini, and I sit down and enjoy my TV for the evening.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't quite happen that way. But Stevie told me we're getting very close to replication.
We're there.
And Stevie, tell me about it. Why do I think that you're full of crap?
That's another story. Okay, well, yesterday I went to the Jacob Javits Center for the 3D Expo there. I was able to meet and speak with the chief marketing officer of 3D Systems, Kathy Lewis, and convince her to come on this show and speak about that product of 3D printing and inform the audience as to what that's all about. So, Kathy.
What is-